friends. My name is Neil, and welcome to this episode 99 of the Get Your Comic Con podcast, coming to you live from downtown San Diego in the convention center at San Diego Comic Con. It is still day two. Plenty more has happened since you heard my chat with Casey Gilley in our last episode. Today, we have been hanging out with a bunch of DC Comics writers. So in this episode, you're going to hear my chat with artist and writer Raphael Grampa, who is bringing you an outstanding new Black Label series book, which is called Batman, Gargoyle of Gotham. And you might just hear a little chat with somebody who goes by the name of Nicole Maines. Yeah, you know her. She is the star of Supergirl. She originated the first transgender superhero on TV with the role of Nia Nal / Dreamer, and has since brought the character into DC Comics. She's appeared in DC Pride, and in April 2024 will be starring in her own YA graphic novel, which is called Bad Dream, A Dreamer's Story, which Nicole is writing at the moment, ready for release, and we've seen some preview artwork from it, and it looks absolutely outstanding. So you are going to hear from Raphael and from Nicole, two very special interviews which took place in the DC booth a little earlier on today. Very cool. Very exciting. Also want to tell you about some other stuff which we have seen in the meantime. We just got out from DC's Dawn of DC Night Terrors panel, where Joshua Williamson, who is the architect of this event, and a whole bunch of the other writers and artists from across the Dawn of DC Night Terrors event were present and talking about what's happened in the first couple of weeks of the crossover event and what is coming up. It's a special 2-month storyline which is running all the way across DC's books, and you will have seen some of our reviews up on the website. A very, very cool panel, which was then followed by one of my favourite artists of all time, Jim Lee, and his Jim Lee and Friends panel. Another amazing event which is becoming an annual tradition at Comic-Con. We also have just got out of the press room for Justice League War World, so you're not going to hear those interviews just yet. I know I mentioned it in the last episode because we were getting ready to go in, but we have just interviewed two of the writers of Justice League War World, so that's Ernie Altbacher and Jeremy Adams. Also the film's director, Jeff Wamster, who I've spoken to on the phone before. And I finally got to meet producer Jim Krieg, who's worked on so many of the DC animated movies. And also Butch Lukic, who we've spoken to and you've heard before on this podcast. So they're going to be coming up very, very soon. I really just need to knuckle down and edit those videos. For now, though, let's start with Raphael Grampa, who is a wonderful writer and artist. And let's talk about his new Black Label book, Batman, Gargoyle of Gotham.
So I am here with Raphael Grampa, the writer and artist of Batman, Gargoyle of Gotham, a new Black Label book, which is starting very soon. How did this start for you? Where did this come from?
This started since I was a kid. I have a big relationship with this character.
Yeah.
Since I was a kid, it's a dream coming true. And actually, the first ideas came up in 2010.
Wow.
When I didn't thought it was possible for me, like a beginner, to take Batman and do my own Batman.
Yeah.
You know, it was a dream. But at that time, DC invited me to do a black and white short story. And then I started to believe a little bit more about that. And I started to build stories, because to work with Batman and try to create our original story for Batman is so hard.
Yeah.
It seems like everybody already did everything. But when you start to go deeper into Batman's myth and legacy, and you start to find some places that it wasn't like very developed yet.
Yeah.
You know, so this is the beauty of this character. He can do a lot, still can do a lot with him. And then I find the right story. So when I thought I was prepared, that happened after working with Frank Miller in the Golden Child project. That time, I have a meeting with Mark Doyle at DC Comics. He asked me like, okay, man, what do you want to do next? And I say, what do you think I want to do?
Yeah.
He say, okay, you want to do Batman? And I say, yeah. He said to me, Yeah, man, I think after working with Frank Miller, you should write for yourself. And I said, that's the pitch. And I have it. I have this right now.
Yeah.
I said, so you have the pitch right now? Yeah. And I told him the idea, like, really quick. And he said, okay, man, just can you give me some images or, like, a little test? Like, oh, sure, sure. And I was, like, already preparing that. You know? So... I can say that it was developing through the years, you know, so I was confident enough to pitch it.
That's so exciting. And not coming into kind of the main Batman, but going into your own Batman book.
Yeah, yeah.
That freedom must be so exciting, especially as a fan then as well, to go, okay, what does my Batsuit look like? What does my Batmobile look like?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How did you even start with, like, deciding on the look of your Batman?
Yeah. Yeah, it took a lot of time, but I used some of the elements I was already showing in my first version of my Batman,
yep.
in the black and white version, and I tried to have a little more, like, a kind of grotesque and gothic concept, like kind of Geiger thing.
Yes, mixed. I definitely got that vibe.
You know, like, because I think if Batman wants to make people scared,
yeah,
he needs to be scary a little bit. But at the same time, I wanted to include some sexy elements. So I think it was Jim Lee that told me that my Batman is grotesque, scary, but at the same time, sexy.
Wow.
And I tried to do that, and that was great when he said that to me,
because
I think it's a good thing to pitch for the audience, like something that looks scary but at the same time attractive.
Yeah.
So that was my goal with that. For the Batmobile, I brought the idea that it's not the Batmobile yet. It's the prototype of the Batmobile. It is the Blind Machine.
Okay.
So this is our car in the story. It's not Batmobile yet. It's a prototype of something that could be the Batmobile in the future. And he's just testing that car. He doesn't relate with the car yet.
Yeah.
He kind of hates the car, but he loves the car. Because it wasn't his idea. It was Alfred's idea.
Okay, interesting.
So, yeah. So we have some of these ideas.
And you talked a bit at the Gotham panel. Was that yesterday? I've lost track of
days.
Yeah,
it was Thursday, yeah.
You talked a bit about introducing your own villains into this, and we got to see three of those characters up on the screen. Can you talk a little bit about those and bringing those characters to life?
Sure, yeah. When I started writing that, I didn't have the idea to create a new rogues gallery, but Batman started to go to some ways that I just found that we needed different villains.
Yeah.
That Joker wasn't fitting, the Penguin, none of them. And I just followed Batman.
Yeah.
You know, I followed him. And he just presented me some of his worst villains. And it was new for me. And it was very organic, you know. When you do a Batman story, man, some very interesting things start happening. Some coincidences, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I'm telling you.
You mentioned a few of them at the panel the other day. It was fascinating.
Yeah, I can tell the story later, but let's talk about the story first. But yeah, that happens, you know? Some coincidences, some strange things. And like how the villains started to come. And some of the villains are old ideas.
Yeah.
I brought some ideas when I was younger, like 18 years old, some characters that I loved and never finished.
Wow.
And I revisited some of my old ideas to see if I had something for Batman. Hey, this is good. Oh, this is nice. And Krytoon, for example, is one of these characters that I have the idea for a long time. And what I can say about Krytoon is his universe is very interesting for me because I'm really obsessed with old cartoon characters.
Yeah.
Like the Rubber Hose cartoon style characters. Yeah. And because I think they're really scary at the same time. You know, I thought they were scary when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And if you change the context, you put that the animations into like a very dark place, scary place. That animation could be very fucking scary.
Yeah.
And I brought this concept and I created this character that are obsessive with these cartoons, and he tries to imitate and materialize the cartoon gags and cartoon violences that he sees only, that can only happen in cartoons.
Yeah.
So imagine those things that can only, he tries to materialize in real life.
Wow.
He's obsessive with doing this. And he cries before committing all of this evil, and you learn why he does that during the story. So you have also the virgin that is connected a little bit with my relationship with faith,
okay,
and religion. When I was younger, I had a big experience with religion. I studied the Bible like lots of times, and I wanted to brought some of the things that I felt when I started to read the Bible and getting closer to the religion. That was when I saw Christ in the cross for the first time. It's very
striking
scary
image.
Yeah, you know, like, so I tried to brought that to a villain. So the Virgin, it's based on that.
Wow.
And we have Mother.
Yep.
That is like Mother. And the only thing I can say, he is the King of Moths.
Interested to get to meet them and live with them a little bit. I've been reading the Ashcan edition that we got at the panel, and the artwork is absolutely stunning.
Oh, thanks, man.
Had you seen that trailer before the panel, or was that the first time that you had seen the trailer that they played for?
I saw it before.
It's outstanding.
Oh,
it's
thanks.
So
nice,
creepy,
man.
And dark. It's,
yeah,
amazing.
It is.
Let's talk about Batman for a second. So in this version, he is kind of killing off the Bruce Wayne persona and becoming Batman as a kind of a full-time thing, which to me as a Bat fan feels actually quite natural. Were you nervous about making that decision? Did that just feel really natural as you were creating the story to have him go into that dark place
I think it would commit to it? I think that will be interesting to see what will happen if he decides to do that.
Yeah.
You know? And actually, when you have this as a storytelling tool, you need to have it as a starting point.
Yeah.
And what I'm showing is like you're killing something you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so the story is about, everything is about this. He thinks he knows what Bruce Wayne is, and that identity is useless, you know, but he understands that he doesn't know anything about Bruce Wayne.
Now, am I right in thinking this is your first time at San Diego Comic-Con?
No, it's the third time, but...
But is this your first time on panels?
The first time at panels with DC.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the first time I was like behind that table.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you have this amazing backdrop behind us now. How has it been? How has this weekend been for you so far?
Pretty intense, actually, like meeting all the fans. I didn't expect their reaction.
It was amazing in that room.
Yeah,
everyone, it was electric.
Yeah, and that echoed.
Yeah.
Through the event, like, people are like approaching me all the time and bringing the Ashcan to sign,
yeah,
and people are very excited to read the book, and it's been tense, you know, and I'm proud of it, you know, like nervous, but at the same time, like proud, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thanks,
I can't wait to read
the
final version when it's out in a few weeks.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Thank you again to DC and to Raphael for taking the time to chat with me, and we will stick with DC for our next interview. This is one that I was really nervous for, but very, very excited for. I was nervous for a bunch of reasons. Firstly, Nicole Maines, awesome. Have you seen her? She is just amazing. I was kind of nervous just because I'm a fan of the Supergirl show and I'm a fan of the character, so I was a bit like, oh my god, you know, this could be a don't meet your heroes moment. But actually, she was lovely, she was incredible, we had such a laugh. There's lots of stuff that's not on camera that you're not going to get to see, which I will treasure forever, just of sitting chatting with her. I was also nervous because obviously from the standpoint of our interview, we're talking to her about this new book, Bad Dream, A Dreamer Story, that she is working on, this wonderful YA graphic novel based on Nia's origin story. But at the same time, you can't escape the fact that Nia originated in the Supergirl TV show, and that's where Nicole first played her and first became acquainted with this character. And, you know, we can't really talk about that right now because of the writers and Actors Guild strikes that are going on at the moment. So I was nervous about getting into any of that and accidentally saying something that either she couldn't answer or was awkward because of the fact that she couldn't answer because of the strike. So I was quite nervous, but we had an amazing time, and I think you're really going to enjoy listening to this one. So here is my interview with Nicole Maines live from the DC booth.
So, I am here in the DC booth with Nicole Maines, writer of Dreamer. I did it! Bad Dream, a Dreamer story.
Hey, I mean, as long as people are talking about it.
Absolutely.
I don't personally care which order it goes
in,
just buy it.
So, congratulations on the book, to begin with.
Thank you.
I'm excited to dive into more of Dreamer's origin. How did this come about for you? Where did this book start from?
Yeah, so I went to DC, and was telling them, of course, Dreamer had originated on the Supergirl series. And I had told them, you know, this is a really spectacular character who is groundbreaking and means a lot for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we should continue her. She should have a legacy in the comic books. She should get to live on. And I went to them, and this is an illustration of truly how much I did not understand how comic books work. Is I came in with a whole pitch and a whole story, and I was like, this is for an ongoing, mind
yep.
you. And I was like, I just think someone should write this story. I don't know why I thought that someone else was going to write a story that I came up with.
Yeah.
But they were, and that I was first off asking for an ongoing right away.
Having why not? Never, why not?
Having really never done anything with DC Publishing ever. And they said, okay, well. that's a lot. But they were very gracious, and they listened to my pitch, and they liked it. But they were saying, you know, before we get into all of that, we have this young adult graphic novel line that's really popping off, and we're looking for more content for that. And we don't have a story about sisters.
Yeah.
Could you write one? And, of course, my first response was, oh, no, you want me to write it? Oh, no, you don't understand. I say the words that other people write. But then COVID hit, and I wasn't doing anything, and it sort of started into this quarantine project that has since grew, and
yeah.
Now I've been writing it for almost 4 years, and I'm ready to never see it again. I want to say it's my baby. I love it so much. I wake up every morning so excited. I might buy a copy just to burn it.
Film that.
Yeah.
You do. Film
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
With this kind of diving into parts of her origin story that we've not seen before,
yeah.
or we've not read before, was that something that you had already had in your mind when you were inhabiting that character? Were you kind of thinking about things just to fill in the blanks for yourself while you were being her?
Yeah. Well, this was to give her a whole new origin story, because, of course, now it's following her as a 15-year-old girl growing up in this town. I've taken pieces that people are a little bit familiar with and just expanded on everything, changed some things, and so it's entirely new. I think there are some things in the story that folks who are familiar with Dreamer will recognize, but it's accessible to people who have never heard of this character, who have no prior experience or history with her. And that was really, really fun, getting to just expand on all of this. I think the most exciting was getting to expand on Naltor as a planet, and getting, because going into the comics and going into the Legion of Superheroes comics, we had a little bit of information about Naltor. We knew that everybody saw the future. We knew that they were highly advanced. We knew that they had a high seer. That was kind of it. There wasn't a lot of socio-political anything going on, so me being the lore-loving, world-building nerd that I am, I took a page out of my brother's book, who's an amazing DM. He does Dungeons and Dragons all the time, and so he has like just pages and pages and journals of world building stuff. And so I was like, I could do that. So I started expanding on Naltor, and that was one of the things that was the most fun, and one of the things I'm most excited for in this story is the new way that Naltor is starting to be presented.
That's really exciting. And obviously, I mean, you've already mentioned it, Dreamer was is a landmark character.
Yeah.
This was a watershed moment for superheroes in general.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen her struggle with being an outsider for being an alien. We've seen her struggle with being a trans woman.
Homegirl got a lot of identities.
Go her.
Go her. How Come on, intersectionality.
How do you distill... Maybe not distill, maybe that's not the right word, but how do you bring that to a YA audience?
Yeah. You know, honestly, head on, and just talking about the issues in their entirety, I think especially for a young adult audience, and even younger audiences, I'm a big proponent of kids and young adults are way smarter than we've been giving them credit for, and they are capable of understanding these larger conversations. Because these conversations, when you look at them, aren't really that large. We're still talking about the same principles that we all learned in kindergarten. You know, treat others the way you want to be treated.
Yes, exactly.
The golden rule. Say please and thank you. Wash your hands. Look both ways when you cross the street. Like, and my book deals with all of that. but this, it is something that I touch on a lot. And I think through the process of writing this book, the world has changed so much, and we have seen such a sharp increase in anti-LGBTQ, specifically anti-trans sentiment and legislation. And so as I've been writing this, all of this has been just occupying my mind, and I've been living in this environment, and it sort of started to bleed into the book.
Yeah.
And it became a catharsis for me.
I was literally just about to say it must have been cathartic.
It gave me an opportunity to address some of these issues, and having a queer cast, having Mia run away to Metropolis and meeting all of these queer girls her age who've been through similar things, having them get the opportunity to say all of the things that have been flying around in my mind, and it's truly just me having a conversation with myself, but it was very cathartic, and I'm excited for folks to read it. I think that queer readers are going to be feel very validated by it, and I think cisgender heterosexual readers, regardless of, you know, if they're allies, if they don't know anything about the communities, I think this is a good, you know, dip your toe in to these waters and get to experience queer culture and get to begin to understand the conversations that are going on in queer circles in a really accessible, fun, superhero-y way.
Let's just talk about the visuals for a second. So you've got Rye
Hickman,
who is doing the artwork.
Talk about Rye Hickman. Rye is amazing, and I am obsessed with everything they've been doing. And every time they send in new pages, I am so excited. And they started drawing the villain recently, and she is everything that my like young, like late 90s, early 2000s, like little gay self loved. Like. Growing up with, you know, just like the oversexed, sultry, I'm bad for the sake of being bad, like goth girl.
Love it.
It's amazing. Oh, Rye's spectacular. And the way they do hair.
Oh, really?
The hair is my favorite part of the comic.
That's amazing.
That's a random thing, but like the hair always looks amazing.
As a new writer as well, for you, seeing that come to life for the first time must be just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's... Yeah, and this is really spectacular because it's my first long form content that I've done. But of course, I've seen this process a couple of times now. I've done, of course, DC Pride.
Yes.
I've done Lazarus Planet. I did Son of Kal-El. So I'm a little familiar with that process of getting. It doesn't stop being awesome.
No, I can imagine.
Well, it's new artists every time.
Yeah.
And another one of my favorite things about writing for Dreamer is getting to see new artists' interpretation of her. Getting to see the new ways they draw the suit, getting to see the new ways they draw the hair and the powers, and it's just been really exciting getting to see her take on other forms of, you know, different artist styles, and it's awesome.
And you've been with her for 5 years now.
I know.
Which is incredible.
Almost six.
It's mad.
Yeah.
I don't want to say ownership because that feels like the wrong word, but do you feel protective?
Well, and legally, it's the wrong word.
Yeah, exactly.
Here we sit at the DC booth. I own nothing.
Do you feel protective? How do you feel about her after being on this really huge journey with her?
She's my baby.
Yeah.
I love her. So, I mean, it's... She's my baby, but also she is me. And I am her.
We are inseparable.
Yes, exactly. It feels a little bit like an Elvira situation at this point.
Who am I talking to?
I don't know. I am very, very protective of her, but I'm so fortunate to have been working with DC and have had them be as supportive of this character.
Yeah.
Well, no one's as supportive of her as I am, but to see them really rally behind her and asking for her more and more, including her in Lazarus Planet, giving her the opportunity to do more stuff that I can't talk about right now.
Ooh.
It's just been really awesome to see, and it feels like for a while I was sort of beating this drum by myself.
Yeah.
Now I look behind me and there's a whole orchestra, and I'm like, oh, well, this is nice and so much easier.
This will be the Dreamer booth next year.
Oh, absolutely. The D stands for Dreamer.
Yeah.
Dreamer content.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom.
Well, that is all the time we have. Thank you so much. I can't wait to read the book.
It
was lovely to meet
you. It's so awesome. Thank you so much, Neil.
Thank you.
Again, massive thank you to DC and massive thank you to Nicole for spending time, and I'm really looking forward to seeing her on the Books for Young Readers panel, which is happening on Sunday morning here at the convention. It's the last of the DC panels for San Diego Comic Con 2023. As I have said with all the interviews, you can check out the video versions over on our YouTube channel. If you enjoy them, please do like and subscribe, and I will be back after a good night's sleep for day 3 of San Diego Comic Con. So I'll see you in the next one, which will be the 100th episode. Bye.